All right. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming out this early. I guess I'll start off by saying I have no financial relationships to disclose. I'd like to acknowledge some folks who worked with me on this project, Joelle Wallstein, Yu-Yan Wang, and Melanie Levy, and also the funding for this work. Okay, and start off with a little bit of background about obesity. I'm sorry if many of you have heard this before, but there are a number of health risks associated with obesity. It's been found to increase the risk of type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and stroke, as well as some cancers. The CDC estimates that the annual medical costs of obesity were $147 billion in 2008 dollars. Probably more than that now, but that was the most recent estimate I could find. And finally, currently, more than one-third of adults in the U.S. are obese, according to recent data collected in NHANES in 2011 and 12. And this chart shows trends in obesity in the United States and also overweight over time between 1960 and up to 2008. And you'll see, looking at the red line, that in the 60s and 70s, about 15% of adults were obese. And unfortunately, by 2000, we see that more than 30% of adults are obese. And the latest data show that, as I mentioned, it's up at about 35% now. The good news is that recent data show that, or suggest that the rates have stopped going up. Nationally, obesity prevalence has not changed significantly since 2003. The other thing that you can notice on this graph is that the rates of overweight have been relatively constant over this time period. Now, there's a growing body of research that examines the influence of neighborhood social environments on health, and in particular, social capital is something that has been found to be associated with a number of health outcomes, including self-rated health, cardiovascular health, and obesity. So, in case you're wondering, what is social capital? Well, the first thing I'm going to point out is that there are a lot of different definitions of social capital. So, what I'm going to talk about is the definition that is close to what we are using in our work. And it's very similar to a definition used by Kawachi and his colleagues, where they talk about social capital referring to social relationships within groups or communities that facilitate cooperation that can bring about mutual benefit within or for these groups or within communities. Social capital measures often include indicators of things like trust, reciprocity, or helping each other out, social networks, and also civic participation. Now, social capital has also been conceptualized and measured at both the individual and the community level, and this has led to some varying conclusions about how it's related to health or whether it's related to health. But there is some previous work that suggests that lower levels of social capital have been associated with greater risk of overweight and obesity. And there are also a few studies that examine whether the neighborhood social environment, including social capital, there are few studies that have looked at this over time, this relationship over time. And so, what we wanted to do was use a population-based data set to look at the longitudinal relationship between social capital and change in weight status among adults. And we also wanted to compare how individual level and neighborhood level measures of social capital were related to changes in weight over time. So, our data source was the Los Angeles Family and Neighborhood Survey, which has two waves of data. This survey is a multi-level population-based survey of families living in Los Angeles County in California. The respondents were sampled from 65 census tracts, which we've conceptualized as neighborhoods in our analyses, and they oversampled poor and very poor neighborhoods. The first wave of data were collected between 2000 and 2002, and the second wave of data were collected between 2006 and 2008. And just to give you a little bit of context about Los Angeles County, in 2000, when the first wave of data collection for LA fans was conducted, Los Angeles County had over 9.5 million residents, which makes it the most populous county in the United States. And the population is larger than 40 out of the 50 states in the country. So it's a very large county with a very large population. It's also geographically large. It covers more than 4,000 square miles. Okay, so our outcome of interest was body mass index. It was actually collected during both waves based on self-reported height and weight. But we examined BMI at wave two as our outcome, and we looked at it as a continuous measure. Now, the LA Fan Survey also included a number of measures of social capital that were based on work done by Sampson and colleagues in the Project on Human Development in Chicago Neighborhoods. In this study, we focused on three indicators of social capital: social cohesion, social exchange, and intergenerational closure or intergenerational ties, which I will talk a little bit more about each of those. So social cohesion is an indicator of trust among neighbors. Our measure was created by summing responses to five questions where folks were asked to rate how strongly they agreed with these five questions: whether they live in a close-knit neighborhood, whether people in their neighborhood are willing to help each other, whether neighbors generally don't get along, whether they don't share the same values, and whether people in the neighborhood can be trusted. And you'll notice some of these items were reverse scored, so that higher scores on all of these items indicate greater social cohesion or greater trust. Social exchange is an indicator of reciprocity among neighbors, or how much people think neighbors are willing to help each other out. And our social exchange measure was created by summing responses to three questions where people were asked to rate how often each of these things occur in their neighborhood, how often neighbors do favors for each other, how often neighbors watch each other's property, and how often you ask your neighbors for advice. And again, higher scores equal a greater level of social exchange or more reciprocity. And then finally, the measure or intergenerational ties is an indicator of connections between adults and children or support for neighborhood children. And our measure was created by summing responses to these five questions where people were asked to, again, rate how much they agreed with these statements. There are adults that kids can look up to in my neighborhood. Adults watch out that kids are safe. Parents in the neighborhood know their kids' friends. Adults in the neighborhood know who the local kids are, and parents in the neighborhood know each other. And again, higher scores indicate greater ties between adults and kids. Now, for each of those measures, we created a measure at the individual level where responses to each item were just summed up for each to create a score for each respondent. But then we also created a neighborhood level social capital measure by aggregating these responses to the census tract by averaging across all of the respondents within a census tract. Our models included several covariates. We adjusted for age, gender, race, ethnicity with the following categories: Latino, Asian, African American, white, and multiracial. We also adjusted for family income, and I say family income slash wealth because this measure includes not only income but also assets. And this measure was log transform in our analyses because it was skewed. And then finally, our analyses control for baseline BMI. So our sample consisted of 1,078 panel adults age 18 and older. So these were adults who had responses in both wave one and wave two. We conducted multi-level regression models that, as I said, adjusted for age, gender, race, family income, and wave one BMI. And we also included a random intercept for census tract to adjust for clustering. So in our sample, the average age was 41.8. This is at baseline. 48% were female, 39% were Latino, 38% were white, 14% Asian, 8% African American or Black, and 1% multiracial. The average family income was $23,700 per family member, so not per household. And then at wave one, the average BMI was 25.9. So this slide shows the adjusted coefficients from our model, showing the relationship between each of the social capital indicators, at the top, the neighborhood level, and then below that, the individual level indicators of social capital. And what I'd like to point out on this slide is that the neighborhood level social capitals were independently associated with changes in BMI, so that higher levels of social cohesion, higher levels of social exchange, and higher levels of intergenerational closure at wave one predicted lower BMI at wave two, adjusting for those covariates, age, gender, race, and income, as well as wave one BMI. However, none of the individual level measures of social capital were related to changes in BMI when we adjusted for those covariates. So just to summarize in text what I just showed on the slide, our measures of social capital were predicted decreases in BMI at the neighborhood level, but the individual level social capital measures were not significantly related. And then other predictors of increases in BMI, in case you're interested, included having a multiracial or being multiracial relative to being white, and also having higher BMI at wave one. And then being Asian was related to or predicted decreases in BMI relative to being white. Interestingly, the family wealth was not associated with changes in BMI. However, it was significantly associated with BMI in cross-sectional models, but once we adjusted for wave one BMI, that relationship went away. So there are a few limitations of this research that I wanted to point out. One is that these results are from Los Angeles County, and so it's possible that they may not generalize to other areas of the country. They're also based on self-reported height and weight as opposed to objectively measured height and weight, and we know there are some bias in these self-reported measures. However, I'd also like to point out a couple of strengths. First of all, that our analyses were longitudinal, and so this lets us assess the impact of baseline levels of social capital on subsequent changes in BMI, so that we know the exposure to these social capital indicators at least preceded these changes in BMI. And we were also able to include both individual and neighborhood level indicators of social capital to sort of compare how these two different kinds of measures relate to changes in BMI. So in conclusion, the neighborhood level indicators of social capital predicted changes in BMI over a period of about 6 years. And these findings suggest that neighborhood level heuristics may be an important and potentially modifiable determinant of weight status among residents. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Why do you think there's such a difference between individual
results? Yeah, I think that's a great question, and it's one that we're still trying to figure out. The question was, why do we think there was a difference between these individual level measures and the neighborhood level measures of social capital? And I think it's particularly interesting because the neighborhood level measures were aggregates of the individual level measures. And what our initial thoughts are that there's something that this aggregate level measure is capturing about the neighborhood environment, that an individual person's perception of that neighborhood is not capturing. But you know, if any of you have other thoughts about that, I would love to hear them. Yes. Yeah, so that's a very good question, and I should have been more clear when I was talking about those results were actually from separate models. So we didn't include all of the measures of social capital in the same model because you're right, they are related to each other. Well, so there. The measure of social cohesion had the largest or the strongest relationship, and it was also significant at the 0.05 level, where our other two measures at the neighborhood level were more marginally associated with less than 0.10. So, you know, I think the social cohesion measure, because of the stronger relationship, may be capturing some things that the other two measures were not. Yeah, we definitely had a range of responses both across census tracts, so the average measure, and I don't remember off the top of my head how much it varied, but we did have variation across census tracts, but we also had variation within the census tracts of, you know, how individual responses varied. Yeah, so, you know, we didn't conduct those analyses, but I think that's actually a great suggestion. What we can say is that, you know, each, and so right now, you know, these coefficients tell us with each point increase of social cohesion, there was a 0.58 decrease in BMI. We don't have the proportion attributable kind of measure that you were talking about. Sure. Yeah, so that's actually a great question, and one of the sort of follow-up analyses that we're doing is looking at actual changes in these measures over time, because they were collected at both wave one and wave two, so that's and something that we're working on ongoing. But in this analysis, and I'm glad you asked because I completely forgot to mention this, but we limited it to people who were living in the same neighborhood in both waves. Yeah, so that's how we sort of dealt with that issue in these analyses. Thank you. Yes.
I'm wondering,
We did run those analyses, and I can't recall off the top of my head exactly what they looked like. But what I can say, which maybe it gets a little bit at your question, is that when we looked at the distribution of BMI broken out into those categories in the two waves, there was very little change in the underweight category between wave one and wave two, and there was also not a lot of change between the overweight category, but what we did see was a fairly large jump in the obese group and in a corresponding reduction in the normal weight group. And we didn't break down specifically who went from normal to overweight and who went from overweight to obese, but it looks like folks were going from normal to overweight and overweight to obese, or potentially some of them going from normal to obese. Yeah. Thank you.